Good afternoon to you, Trinidad and Tobago. It is 8 minutes after the hour, and it's time for the Lunchtime Doctor with our resident doctor, Dr. Sophia Mohammed. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon to our listeners locked into your Lunchtime Doctor. As you know, this is the program where we get to dissect your medical challenges, where you get to ventilate and let us know what's bugging you. Let's make sure we also adopt those healthy habits shared right here on your Lunchtime Doctor program, the program that gives you the ways to optimize your health. Also, let us know what's on your lunchtime plate. Let's hear, what are you eating? Let's make sure it's according to the books. And for all those who are in doing medical investigations, let us know what your BP, what your sugar values are. Let's let you know if you are optimized and, of course, on the right track. All right here on your Lunchtime Doctor.
And of course, folks, our numbers to call are 627-3223, 625-2257. Send your WhatsApp messages to 3061065. And of course, we're heard right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 and Vibe 105 FM. Feel free to message those stations and they will forward your messages right here to us. Of course, Doctor, the helpless today, what did we deal with?
So what we looked at is continuing in the vein of looking at our children's mental health, our adolescents, as they move through these many different transitions, as they move from one school space to another, as they progress from one form to another, ways and things that we can identify to help the parents, help the teachers see if there are any behavioral challenges. You see, what many students go through is many different changes. We need to recognize that as our children start this school term, that their mental health is a crucial for us to look at, pay attention to as they approach their adulthood. You know, what is important for us to recognize is that children also have mental health concerns. And often, even World Health Organization has shared that they often go undiagnosed and untreated. And that is something that bothers me tremendously. I'll never forget the day I read some news in our Guardian and across the different media houses of a 9-year-old young boy unfortunately succumbing to suicide. And it was just after he got a result from school that was not the best. There was an argument in the home, and then the mother would have gone out of the home space. He was unfortunately left alone. When she came in, he was unfortunately hanging. And that broke my heart in so many ways. And I'm sure, you know, there are so many things that could have been done differently. Mm-hmm. But we're not looking here in a space of judgment. Yeah. We're looking at how we can help, how we can prevent, how we can identify, how we can communicate, how we can support our children better. Mm-hmm. Let's also know that we as parents, caregivers, have to be able to support ourselves. Because if we're not in a good space, we won't be able to give them that love and support. And often, children trigger, children are mirrored in the spaces that they're in. So if they see violence, anxiety, that's the behaviors they are going to mirror. Mm-hmm. Also?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So in our Guardian Health Plus, that's exactly what we looked at, how to identify these common mental health concerns in our teens, in our adolescent, some positive ways, some steps to look at our mental health in particular. Both for adults and children, and what you can do as a parent, what you can do as a teacher, what you can do as a healthcare professional, because we often have to ensure that all across the board is optimized to know how to deal with these conditions for our young ones.
Mm. Do you think sometimes, you know, parents push their children too much? I mean,
well, that's across the board.
Yeah.
You know, parents will always be the ones. So sometimes it may be seen as pushing, encouraging. Mm-hmm. They want better for them. Many parents would have not had these certain luxuries they may offer their children. Yeah. So it's always about finding that delicate balance. Mm-hmm. Here's a good way of making sure children stay grounded and stay compassionate and empathetic mm-hmm. to what's happening around us. Over this weekend, we are going to be engaging in a cleanup, beach cleanup, being attentive to the environment, taking your children to the orphanage, letting them see children in depressed, who are at risk, who are underprivileged, children who may have less than them, helps keep them grounded at all times. Just recognizing that there's that balance. So for the parents who may be pushing their children, it may also be because they would want better for them. And sometimes you have to find the nice balance, the line between discipline and encouragement. And often, most parents may not straddle it well. Sometimes they may be too stern as a disciplinarian because that's the only way they know how to enforce and not know how to communicate with compassion. So that's something that we often need to continue to learn and grow in. Based the time I would have better understood how to communicate with compassion is when I recognized that my little son was autistic and I really had to figure out how to communicate mm-hmm. so he would understand.
Right.
So even myself as a doctor mm-hmm. still had to learn proper communication.
Yeah, that's something that is a continuous learning communication.
Exactly.
All right, folks. All right, so let's get on with your questions. 627-3223, 625-2257. Of course, WhatsApp messages 306-1065. What is a gallbladder sludge and can it be cured?
Very good question. Now, we have quite a few patients coming in with gallbladder issues. It may be gallstones. It may be, as this patient mentioned, the gallbladder sludge. That is something that is a very difficult terminology. It is treatable. But once we don't address the underlying concerns, then the gallbladder will be at risk. Now, that terminology, gallbladder sludge, would be picked up on an ultrasound. So I'm pretty certain that you may have read it on your ultrasound. And that's when the bile duct that is indeed produced specifically by the gallbladder, remains in the gallbladder for a little too long. It may then become mixed in with calcium salts. It become mixed in with cholesterol. That gallbladder sludge can now even progress to a gallstone. Can it be treated? Yes, it certainly can be treated, but here's how we want to encourage that you prevent it. Just like we said, it when it builds in with the cholesterol deposits, or if there's a little too much of those saturated fats. So again, it boils down to nutrition. I don't think people realize how much what you eat fuels you, how much what you eat affects your metabolism. So that's what the gallbladder sludge is. Some persons may experience some serious pain, especially if you're thinking of the anatomy of the body and where that gallbladder is, which is on the right side of the abdomen, so right upper abdomen. That pain may be so debilitating, it can cause referred pain, it can even lead to vomiting and nausea. We encourage anyone with pain in the abdomen, be it left, right, center, anywhere, please get it checked out. Hope that answers the question.
All right, folks, of course, you're listening to Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm. What can be used for fungus under the feet? There is always a buildup of skin under the feet.
Very good question. So first and foremost, let's take that step forward in taking better care of our feet. That buildup of either dry skin, maybe from just not being able to take care of the skin, it may be a callus formation. Sometimes it may just be a little bit of dry skin accumulating, and then there's a superimposed infection on it. So what do? We have to, one, make sure it is indeed a fungal infection. It may be a bacterial infection. A discoloration of the nail, a discoloration of the skin may not only be a fungal infection. So one, let's take proper care of it. Two, if it is a fungus, there are over-the-counter antifungal medications that can be applied both topically or it can be systemically, as in medications. But most importantly, I would say, is preventing it from happening. So let's just say you have to have your feet in boots all day and sweaty. You want to ensure your feet are comfortable. So you want to ensure you have comfortable socks, comfortable foot care, so that you're not creating like a petri dish for further infection. Hope that answers your question.
All right, so more feet issues here. Good day, doctor. I'm a 24-year-old getting a scratching in my heel. It's unbearable.
So again, that certainly sounds like some level of infection. It can both be either fungal or bacterial. Please keep in mind, sometimes little cuts, little unhealed sores can develop into a fungal infection, can even develop into a sore or an abscess. So if there is that debilitating symptom of a itch, scratch, anything that's bothersome, take that next step and get it checked out.
Hi, good day, doctor. I got the cold. I have lots of coughing. I remain with hiccups, and it comes and goes, and so much during the day. This has been happening for 4 days now. What can I do?
Oh, my gosh. So if you're experiencing that dry cough post, after having a virus, after having a bacterial infection, most times than not, it is indeed mucus that has built into the lungs, stayed into the lungs, that hasn't been expressed. So very much it needs to be expressed, it needs to be coughed out. What is recommended most times than not is that mucolytic. And when we say mucolytic, a mucolytic can either be directly into the lungs as a nasal, or it can certainly be one that you're doing systemically and will help break down the mucus. So one, we want to treat the triggers of the cough. And now you're saying you're hiccuping. Again, it may be the body's way of clearing that mucus. So I would suggest you can do a home nebulizer. Simple to do a home nebulizer or home humidifying system. You just want to be inhaling some steamed air. Deep breaths. That may help if there's any dried mucus within the pathways of the respiratory system or the cells of the respiratory system. It will certainly help break up that mucus. And you may want to take an expectorant if it's recommended. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Good day, Doc. This person did not say their age, but they said now and again they experience lots of dizziness. Can you please help?
Now, honestly, this is one of those symptoms that we see in the clinic, I think every single day, most persons will present with dizziness, and then on deeper investigation, it may be associated to chest pains. It may be associated to headaches. It may be associated to anemia, as in increased menstrual bleeding. So it can be a symptom that presents with other symptoms, and that's what we want to know. What are the other symptoms? Dizziness tends to be a symptom because of any one of the systems being affected. Even if your thyroid values are lower, as in hypothyroidism, you may experience dizziness. So let's make sure we know what the additional symptoms you're experiencing and we get it checked out. Even if there's something with the vestibular system, the ear, nose and throat, because if there's an infection in the air, one can also experience dizziness. If your blood pressure is a little on the lower end, you can experience dizziness. As you'd realize, there's a host of things, and this is why the doctor-patient conversation is so extensive. Anyone who comes into my office, we tend to take at least 30 minutes going through that history and examination. So here's what I want to do. To the caller who sent any message, what are the other symptoms you're experiencing? If you think it's affecting your quality of life, do not sit on it. Please go get it checked out. Because here's what I often worry about. When that dizziness progresses, and say you're driving a vehicle and the dizziness comes on. Say you're walking down a stairs and the dizziness comes on. Guess what? The next step is unfortunately a fall and a fractured hip. So let's get it checked earlier rather than later. Hope that answers your question.
Good day, Doc. What about losing your balance sometimes? I'm a 45-year-old male, and sometimes I tend, ever so often, to sort of lose my balance. Is there something wrong?
Yes. Again, You know, again, I'm so grateful that we have this radio program, because sometimes we experience these troubling symptoms, we keep it to ourselves. But I hope each one of you sending your messages take the advice. If you're losing your balance, you're also at risk of a fall. That's not healthy. Something is wrong. I just mentioned a host of different systems that are affected. It could be your blood pressure. It could be something wrong off with the vestibular system, your ear, nose, and throat. It could be thyroids. It could be a number of symptoms in a number of disease pathology processes that could lead or present with either the dizziness or losing your balance. So take that next step. And please get it checked out. The next thing I wouldn't want is for that dizziness or losing your balance to happen and you fall and you say fracture a limb, or unfortunately put yourself in a worse condition than you are now. So as they say, you know, was it a stitch in time saves nine? Yes.
Definitely. All right, good afternoon, Doc. How do I help my 15-year-old with depression and anxiety?
Very good question. And in today's Guardian Health Plus, that's exactly what we looked at. Some of these concerns that our young ones, our adolescents in particular, go through. So let's talk about anxiety and depression. Most times than not, it is some sort of environmental trigger. Is it something happening at school? Is it something happening as they move through this adolescent phase? Keep in mind, they are going through so many changes in their body, so many hormonal changes. So how can you as a parent or a caregiver help your 15-year-old? One, give them that space to know, that trust in space, that they can come to you. Try in the conversation to not be judgmental. Be empathetic. Give them that listening ear. Most times than not, they just want to be heard, valued, loved, supported. We're not doing it in a space of judgment. And I say that over and over, because we as parents, as caregivers, have to be able to listen to what they're saying, what they're sharing, and of course, guide them through the next steps. It's okay as a parent if you don't know what those next steps are. That's where you can lean into a senior in the community, some sort of religious body, or even a healthcare professional in terms of a therapist. Yes, it's okay to get that help, even if it means medications, because most times are not, especially when it reach depression and anxiety. There may be a neurochemical imbalance. If one is diabetic, that means something is wrong with the pancreas. Similarly, if one is depressed or a general anxiety disorder, it may be the neurochemicals. Something is off with the brain and we need to get it checked. There are a host of medications that can help, and there are a host of lifestyle changes that can help. Sometimes it may just mean doing something together as a level of support to give them that structure. Hope that answers your question.
Good afternoon, doctor. My right big toenail cracked. Could you tell me what is happening? No pain.
I'm glad you're not having any pain. Most times than not, just as we talked about with the fungal infection, with the toenails, it tends to be the footwear that we're wearing, and there may be a superimposed fungal infection with the nail. That's why it may have made it brittle. It may make it at a risk of cracking. One, let's make sure it isn't a fungal infection. Present to your doctor, present to the healthcare professional so we can treat it directly. There are a host of medications that we can use, but we'll certainly need to see that to be able to make that assessment.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, Sangit 106.1, and Vibe City 105 FM, with the kind compliments of Superfarm. Good afternoon, Doc. My husband is 61 years. His pressure is always three numbers, top at the bottom, right, with slight dizziness, with headaches, 24 hours. He is using pressure tablets, and it is not working.
So thank you so much for letting us know, but it'd been great if you could have told us what the values are for the blood pressure. If it's elevated, then as you just said, the blood pressure medications are not working in terms of what will help him bring down that blood pressure. Is it that we need to do one step further and do an ECG or an echo? Is it that we need to help reevaluate what the nutrition is like? Is he also staying aligned to proper hydration? Sometimes we may be taking the medication, but not eating well, not drinking the necessary requirements of water for the day. All of that is now going to compromise our system. So yes, it's important to be compliant with the medication, but also looking at the other lifestyle measures. And you mentioned a host of signs and symptoms. My suggestion to you is take that next step. Be brave. Whoever it is that you would have prescribed the medications, let's return to that healthcare professional and, of course, be reassessed.
Another thing, too, is you could probably leave it up to him to take the medication and he's not taking it.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that we see with a lot of our male patients, base. They really feel they're supermen. And yes, you are, but we want you to be our supermen and take good care of your health.
All right, so doctor, every so often my tummy burns, and when I spit blood. What may be the cause of 40 years of age?
So this is not something you need to be calling me about. This is something you need to go straight to the health center. Anyone who is bringing up blood means there's an ulcer or there's some sort of tear either along the esophagus, the digestive tract, or within the gut lining. That blood, that tear, that ulcer could be anywhere along there. And here's the unfortunate thing that can happen. The ulcer can worsen, and today it might be spitting up blood, tomorrow it might be vomiting blood. And yes, we have seen patients lose so much blood just by vomiting blood that they may go into a state of anemia, they may collapse, they may even go into a coma. So let's make that literal red flag, because it's in your face red flag, and take that next steps, go to the hospital. Anyone who's vomiting blood, spitting up blood, that's not normal. So let's get that checked out, please.
Hi, good afternoon, doctor. My dad got a stroke 3 weeks ago and he can't walk. Someone told my brother there is a doctor in San Fernando who gives a stroke patients an injection and they will be able to walk again. My brother carried him yesterday by the doctor in San Fernando, and the doctor gave him the injection, and he took $300. And the doctor told my brother to bring him back every week for another injection. The doctor said he has 3 more injections to get. What I want to know, doctor, is it possible my dad could walk again? He took those injections, please. If he took those injections, thank you.
Thank you so much for letting us know all of this that's happening. I would love to be able to give you good news. Now, here's the gambit, the A to Z of stroke. If it affected some part of the brain that controls the limbic system, and that's the ability to move, movement, walking, etc., then chances are walking will not be achieved right away. Physiotherapy is what's recommended. I really don't know what that injection is. I honestly feel you're being taken for a ride, and as much as I would love to be able to offer hope that those injections will specifically help or return your dad to a space of being able to walk, it may not be the accurate thing or the correct thing to be done. Here's what will help in terms of getting back to that state of mobilization. One, whatever antihypertensive medication so we can manage the blood pressure. Two, some physiotherapy, as in retraining the body to be able to walk. Unfortunately, some persons may never be able to fully regain that control, and some persons can, but every single patient is a unique patient. However, in terms of what that injection is, it really does not sound very medically inclined. And I'm very concerned about this particular person who may unfortunately be giving you wrong advice.
And for the person who messaged early on about their 15-year-old with depression and anxiety, they said he's in child guidance and suspected autism, and he's also on medication.
Yeah. So I'm really glad that he is under that monitoring of child guidance. Let's talk a little bit about autism. Yes, all of our autistic children do experience heightened anxieties, heightened emotional state. Let me explain this and be very granular. Say we experience pain on a level, say 0 to 10, and we might feel pinprickers, and we might feel it at level 2. An autistic will feel it at level 200. Their stimuli is amplified. Say they go out into the sun and it's really very hot. They, while we may feel that level of heat, their entire body may feel like pins and needles, insects crawling all over them. It tends to be amplified. Even what they eat, their palate, the way they taste foods, the aromas they smell, everything, that stimuli is over-exaggerated. And when they are feeling that over-exaggerated, they tend to become very anxious. They tend to end up being introverted. And one may feel or think that they are indeed depressed. It may not be depressed. It may just be that's their protective mechanism of shielding themselves from all of that stimuli. And I'm saying this not as a doctor. I'm saying this as a mother, because for all of our listeners, they would know that I've shared many times right here on this program that I myself have an 11-year-old autistic child. So I live with this every single day, and I know what mechanisms I have to put in place to ensure my child does not become overly anxious. He has means and ways of diffusing that extra stress. And of course, we protect him from the world. How do you protect them from the world in a world that can be very harsh? You give them those necessary coping skills and know that every day is a day to teach them something new.
All right, good afternoon, Doc. Tomato seeds bad for your kidneys? Are you supposed to throw them away when cooking?
So no, tomato seeds are not bad for your kidneys, and you certainly can still use them in all of your cooking, because guess what? You're adding a little bit of fiber and a little bit of vitamin C. So I hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, of course, 6273-223-625-2257, right? And of course, our WhatsApp message is 306-1065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm. All right, the question here. Hi, Doc. I had a C-section, 9 months ago. Now I always have weak legs, always falling down, and kind of climbed heights. Conduct to be normal, please. I would like to know.
I'm really sorry you're experiencing all of that. Now, again, that's just a 1 minute bit of information. While you're sharing that, a host of other questions are coming to mind. So what I'd want to know is, post C-section, did we do that follow-up, that postnatal visit with whichever healthcare professional or institution? Let's make sure that you are getting back to that strengthened position. What most times happens is post-section, one may not be as mobile as they typically would need to be, even though you would have a baby to take care of, and may not get that time to attend to yourself. However, in this specific case, because you said you're feeling weakened legs, I definitely want you to get checked up, more so a neurology check. And when I say neurology, we're looking specifically at the nerves in particular. This, what you mentioned there, is absolutely not normal. So I would consider that a red flag and get it checked out.
Also referring to the same question, can I use any medication for the weakness in my legs since I had this infection from 9 months?
So if there's an infection, yes, there certainly are medications. But again, let's get it prescribed by a healthcare professional. If there's an infection post C-section, probably you need to be on specific antibiotics. if there's an infection that's permeating into the legs or permeating into the nerves, then you certainly need to get that checked out. This is not something I can just write as a recommendation right here over the radio, because it would take a number of investigations, and I trust you want to give yourself that proper checkout by your healthcare professional.
All right, let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Sort of lost that one. Please feel free to call us back. 627-3223-625-2257. I have a long one here about vitamin B12 deficiency. Somebody's very interested to know about vitamin B12. Could you probably just give us everything that is good about vitamin B12?
So everything there needs to know about vitamin B12. Yes, it is indeed one of those essential nutrients that we need in terms of metabolism. It plays a significant role in glucose metabolism, in supporting our nervous tissue, our nerve structure. What do we get it in? We actually get vitamin B12 in a number of foods, in those green leafy vegetables, in our pumpkin, in our tomatoes. So yes, you can get it in the foods that we eat, but for those, our elderly in particular, who may not have the best appetite, this is where we may need a supplementation. For our patients who have had strokes, for our patients who even have diabetic or hypertensive neuropathy, we tend to accelerate or involve in their treatment, we tend to add that vitamin B12, thiamine in particular. And yes, it's available as an OTC, over-the-counter medication. We tend to add it into their medical regime in order to give that extra support to their nervous tissue. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, 627-3223-625-2257. Once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Hello, good afternoon. Yeah, we're hardly hearing you, sir.
I have a simple question. I have a friend. With a
Hi, good afternoon. We're hearing you, but in a very low tone. Can you speak up?
Very rarely hearing you, sir. But speak. I'll try to listen up as much as we can. But speak a little louder.
You know?
Much better now. Yes.
Right. My friend's son. He's about 23, 24. But his I'm thinking that his long-term memory is so bad that she would now tell him to do something. And just in about 10, 15 minutes, he acted and he forget what she told him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he does little mechanic work, but he remembers that while he's captain and put back up at that, and he remembers that. But if you tell him something and he has to go do it and do something, that he forget what he has to do.
Right.
How can you help with that? Thanks.
Thank you so much for calling in about this. When our elderly, our loved one...
He's 23.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. That was the earlier part. 23 years old.
23, 24.
So anyone who's having cognitive deficits, problems with their memory, this is where, again, it may be early onset dementia. And while we have Alzheimer's, which is one of the elderly, we can have early onset dementia even in our young persons. So as young as in the 20s, there can also be something called a TIA, transient ischemic attack, which is like a mild stroke that affects some part of the brain. So what you're describing there is concerning to me. Please take that next step. Get him checked out. He probably needs a CT scan or MRI, because there may be a bleed in the brain. There may be an infarct or some sort of deficit that's leading to that long-term memory, that memory loss. It's definitely concerning, especially at the age of 23.
All right, 20 minutes away from 1 o'clock. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm. Good day, Doctor. I can't help but eating my meals fast. Is this some kind of condition? What can I do?
No, I don't think it's a condition. I think it's just as a product of the environment that you're in.
Cookie Monster may
just be the hassle of the day. But here's what you're doing. You're doing a huge service to yourself, because you're trying to put a lot of food into a small space. think of your stomach as no bigger than, say, a lemon. And we can't put all of that food and expect the stomach to now digest it. You may put yourself at problems of reflux, at digestive issues, compromise your gut health. Let's not do that when you already know what the error is. And you know, I giggle, I laugh, because again, I worked in the ICU. And when you're working in the intensive care unit, you barely had time to breathe, far less eat, because that's a luxury, okay? And I remember very clearly one of my friends coming to visit during a lunchtime hour. They brought a little fruit, and literally, it was demolished in like a minute or two. And they're like, did you inhale that?
Yeah, but is there a proper way to chew your food, Doc?
Of course. It's actually recommended that you chew your food 33 times.
Yeah. So, you know, there's somebody always telling me that, and I know they're listening and laughing right now because I have a way. My food disappears very quickly.
You inhale the food, yes. Yeah, yeah. But we're doing ourselves an injustice. So we mightn't be able to do the 33 times chewing, but let's at least give our bodies that time to digest it in small portions. Please, let's not. I don't want you calling 2 years from now and saying, you know, now I have reflux.
All right. And the person said they're a police officer, by the way.
You see? Same exact things. Yeah. I did say the product of the environment and what is occupational hazard. But take that time, because we're not able to fully serve if we're not properly nutrified.
All right. Good day, doctor. A lovely doctor. You really have to be strong to deal with these autistic and special needs children.
Yes, we do.
It's a pity that the government does not provide the facilities for them at very subsidized costs. God bless.
Yes, but here's the thing. I want each and every parent, caregiver, grandparent to know that you can play that role in your child's life. I view my little one as extraordinary. And the minute I switch the way I view him, and the minute we start to look at all of their skills as superpowers, because they really are gifted, while they may have deficits in some areas, be it their social, be it their cognitive development, they are so blessed with many other gifts. And yes, you're very correct. More support is needed in the educational area, in the holistic development of autistics, but I constantly believe that each one of us here is here to serve a purpose. And I honestly have seen my own son charter his own course, and I believe he and the host of other autistic children that we see in this new age, because they're quite tech, you know, they will bring solutions to even their own concerns.
Yeah, man, I always love that show, The Good Doctor.
Yes.
Great show. Hi, Doctor. Blessed day to you and PSI. How high should a child's blood sugar level be?
So just like with adults, we don't want anyone's blood sugar crossing 120 milliliter. If you're checking the HbA1c, which is a very specific, it's a glycosylated hemoglobin, we don't want it crossing 6.5%. When you're checking the blood sugars, also makes a big difference. If it's a fasting blood sugar, that is the very first time you do the blood sugar testing in the morning without any food, you want it under 100 milligrams per deciliter. So how high? We really don't want it crossing 120 or 100 milligrams per deciliter. If, however, it is more than that, then please, I ask you, contact us at the Diabetic Association of Trinidad and Tobago. You can find us on Facebook. And before the end of the program, I'll make sure, let me see if I can pull it up right here, because I did say we were going to, right. So the number is 607-DATT. And you know, as we mentioned that, I'm here to also share that for all of our diabetic patients, we here at the Diabetes Association have our free diabetic eye screening days at our Shaguanas Health Center, Shaguanas headquarters on the 15th, in Belmont on the 19th, in Woodland at the 26th, and St. Augustine on the 29th. You can get more information on our Facebook page, on the website, and keep in mind, this is by appointment only. So that number, 607-3288. We're here to help as much as we can give you those services, because we know how costly they are.
All right, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Hello?
Yes, hello? You're on air?
Lunchtime Doctor. I'm calling to recognize a problem. My mom's foot only swelling. And she's seen doctor left, right, and center, and nothing going on.
Yeah.
But I get some explanation, please.
I'm so sorry you're in that situation. So again, to all of our listeners, they know I always ask, what's that trigger cause? Is it high blood pressure? Is it diabetes? If there's swelling, that's called edema, especially in the around the ankles. That may be some sort of, as Trinese like to say, a circulation disorder. What is the trigger? So if it is high blood pressure, we need to manage that. Because guess what? You can see 10, 12 different doctors. If we're not being consistent with the medication, looking at the lifestyle habits, and of course, sometimes it may just be ensuring what we eat, because you can take all the medications, but the food that you may be eating may have so much salt, it will accelerate that fluid accumulation. Or let's make sure, even at whatever age she is, she's getting a little bit of exercise. That will help in the general circulation. And yes, even if she's aged, you know, yesterday in the gym, there was this lovely couple, 70 and 72. And base, they were lifting more weights than me. And they were fitter than myself. And it was such an inspiring place to be, because they did not, so they certainly didn't look age 70 and 72. And they were helping and supporting each other. They mightn't be living a lot, but they're doing it in repetition. They're doing it together, and they're making sure they stay healthy. So age is not a limiting factor when it comes to exercise. I hope everyone listens and hears that.
Yeah, but is it that some people feel just because they're getting medication that will just
fix
cure everything, and you're not going to change your lifestyle?
That is definite. That's what we see all the time. Yes, the medications are important. That will give you one level of control, but a big factor in that control is what we eat, our nutrition, and of course, as I mentioned yesterday, the stress levels. That is your triangle, your pillars of good health. So let's make sure we're all taking that control on our health.
Beautiful. All right. Good day, doctor. I'm a 53-year-old female. I have cold symptoms and a clogged nose over 2 months now. Can you advise? I did try several cold and allergy meds, but nothing seems to be working.
So first and foremost, that Sahara dust keeps getting worse. So one, we need you to identify what the triggers are. If it is an extensive cough and cold, is it a post-nasal drip that you're having? Is it some concern with the ear, nose and throat? So anything that's extending over such a long time, please, let's get that evaluated, because you certainly sound like it's quite distressing. Hope that answers your question.
All right, here's a little lunchtime plate info for you.
Definitely.
For lunch, add steamed karaili, a little rice, a slice of kingfish, water, no pee water today, a 68-year-old female.
Well, you know, I want you to send a little bit for me to try in the studio, bake it minus the karaili, okay? Just minus the karaili. But excellent lunchtime plate, excellent. That is what everyone should be eating. And it sounds like quite a nutritious meal, because there's a good balance of protein, a good balance of vegetables, and yes, you can have the carbs, but the healthy carbs.
Some more food here. Good day, doctor. I love cuckoo. Could you say what is the nutrition value you get from it?
Excellent. So cuckoo is what we call blue food. While there is potato, which gives us a certain types of carbohydrates, cuckoo, be it dashin, be it cassava, it has a lower glycemic index. What is that glycemic index? How much it stimulates our glucose metabolism. So while potatoes are also in that same carbohydrate bracket, cassava and your sweet potatoes, what you use to create your cuckoo, is a lower glycemic index. So great health benefits there. Let's just make sure you still keep everything in moderation. Do not need to eat cuckoo every single day, because it's still a high amount of carbs.
And watch your salt. All right. Let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Doc, I was listening to what you just said with regards to people taking medication and believing that is wrong. I just wanted to share this. I don't know if you probably remember. I was one of the callers who called you some time ago and told you that after having a heart attack back in April of last year, I took a decision to stop smoking.
Yes.
And I haven't since touched a cigarette. or even save the cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, I had my clinic appointment last week, Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
which is a year and 4 months after. And Dr. Swami, and they did, I don't know what exactly what you call it, but something similar to like an ultrasound.
Right. Yes, an echocardiogram.
Okay, so they looked at it and they said that there is quite a lot of improvement that they are seeing. Mm-hmm.
In the ejection fraction, yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share that, you know, because of my decision to stop smoking, which I think is the greatest factor in that improvement, coupled with medication, yes, but also exercise and I guess my diet as well, all of that has played a part in the improvement that the doctors are seeing. And mm-hmm. When they said that they're seeing improvement, I felt so elated because, you know, I know it is what I am doing
yes. That
is causing this improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so happy to know that I'm actually doing something right. Yeah.
So
I just wanted to share that with you now. It's been, what, it's a year?
16
and
months.
And 5 months since I stopped smoking. And I know you always say that, you know, when you stop smoking within the first week and the first month and the first year, how much improvement
yes.
there is.
Yeah.
How much healthier it is. And when the doctor shared that information last week, well, I remembered, you know, that you mentioning about the improvements in your life when you stop smoking.
Excellent.
And that made me feel, you know, really good.
Caller, you just made my day, honestly. Here's the thing. I give advice here. We've crossed over 500 programs and I keep hoping someone listens. And not just someone, but everyone listens. And not just listen, but action the advice.
Yeah.
And in that past 16 to 17 months, you not only stopped smoking, but you were able to action exactly as we talked about, the problems that smoking does to our body and when we do stop smoking. And here, you literally gave us a living testimony. Because unfortunately, a heart attack can compromise our health, that it may unfortunately even take our lives. But
yeah. Here
you're seeing that you went to your doctor and they actually told you they saw improvement in your ejection fraction. That is what we want with our patients. So thank you so much for endorsing all of the advice that we give. Yes, it's your medication, but it's those lifestyle factors as well. So kudos to you.
Yeah,
keep up that good job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On Friday, actually, I probably would have walked. I had some errands to run, and I just did all of it just walking. So I probably would have walked maybe about a mile on Friday doing running my errands, you know, back and forth.
Well done.
All right, there. Thank you there, caller. Let's take another call. 627-3223-625-2257. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Doctor, I would like to know if cornmeal is a good thing for porridge.
So thanks so much for asking that question. Yes, cornmeal can be quite useful. We just want to make sure it's not overly sweetened. Sometimes in our preparation, we may add a little too much sugar, a little too much oil. So it's just how you prepare it. I want to just remind all of our callers, we're coming down to the last couple of minutes. So to that previous caller, thank you so very much for sharing your testimony. And I do hope all of us take that advice. Know you can utilize the advice you share here and share it with someone else. You may be saving a life, that of yours and a loved one.
All right, let's take a call. We have 4 more minutes to go. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. Could you tell me what causes acid reflux and what effect it has on anybody?
Okay, so that takes more than 4 minutes, but here's the things you need to know in a nutshell. acid reflux may be caused by some of our own lifestyle factors, poor eating habits, if we're not able to eat on time, if there is some sort of ulceration, if there's some sort of concern with our stomach, with the lining, or if there's ulceration. So good, gastroesophageal reflux disease, we can put ourselves at risk of that, even if we're on certain medications and we're just taking the medications, not taking the medications along with eating. Even the medication called aspirin, it's always recommended to have your EC, enteric coated aspirin, because aspirin and most of some of the medications can damage the lining of the stomach and the gut. So reflux is something that can be caused by a number of different factors. What you can do from today: one, we need to watch your eating habits, and as I'm speaking to you, I'm also telling myself this as well. Watch the amount of caffeine you're having. Caffeine can also lead to reflux. And of course, if you can manage the amount of meals into small portions throughout the day, you're going to give the stomach less work to do, thereby not having as much reflux. Some persons even have reflux and it wakes them up in the night. So here's what you can do at the night: elevate your head so that you're allowing gravity to work with you, not against you. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get a final one. This is one concerning early on with the child with the high blood sugar, mm-hmm. right? Asking, they said the granddaughter is 8 years old. The child is 8 years old. The sugar was tested and it's 171.
Mm-mm.
Is that high?
So 171 milligrams per deciliter, yes, certainly is very high. Thank you so much for testing. That's okay. 8 years, yes, it may be a type 1 diabetic. Here's what we need her to do sooner rather than later. Either the health center, the emergency room, somewhere, because 171 can put them at a risk of a hyperglycemic coma. Please, let's bring that down sooner rather than later. This is where we're giving you, that is a red flag. So that means go to the health center right away, or your healthcare professional if you're going privately. Please, 171 milligrams per deciliter puts the child at risk, compromising all parts of the body. So I hope this advice you take seriously.
All right, Doc, we'll just go over again what's in our Health Plus for
today. So, we're down to the very last minute. Can you believe the 1 hour flew by? And I love the questions that we got today. In your Guardian Health Plus, we looked at, as our children return into their academic year, how we can better support them, their mental health in particular. This entire week is World Wellness Week. So how we can support our own health and well-being? PAHO WHO has said and given the theme, what we know, what we care, we should be implementing every day, not just today. So let's make sure we take those steps. And while it's a reminder for you, it's all just as much alpha. With the care we need, the care we want, the care we desire. That is indeed the theme for the World Wellness Week by PAHO WHO, and it's represented, echoed across the world. So to all of our listeners, I hope this was your dose of wellness. Take one step today to optimizing your health. I'm always so grateful for our sponsor, Superfarm, your prescription for trust, our fabulous team here, TBC Network, and of course, you all, my cherished listeners. Join us again right here, 12 to 1, for your Lunchtime Doctor.